This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Old Yeller, Old Yeller, Old Yeller. Here, Yeller, come back, Yeller. Best doggone dog in the West.
Old Yeller was a mongrel.
Hello and welcome to this week's exciting episode of Richer and the Mailman. I'm Josh Richer, and of course, with me always, even if I don't want him to be, is the mailman Jeff Machado.
What's up?
So we had a big episode this week, Rabid Dog. We kind of figured it would be because they've been getting bigger and bigger every week. Got a lot to talk about. First though, if you're listening, we thank you. If you also, I don't know how you got here, but we're really glad for you to be checking this out and riding out this final wave here with Breaking Bad. Final wave of the summer.
Final wave of the summer, final wave of the series. Tell your friends, this is the best Breaking Bad podcast on the internet. Fact.
It is a fact. It's true. So the summer is winding down. We'll get to Rabid Dog. I mean, that was big. A lot of metaphors here, a lot of colorful metaphors in this episode.
Oh, yeah, the colors.
The colors.
Did you know that? Did you know that, like, each character is associated with a certain color? And every time, like, they go through something, they're wearing, like, certain color clothing. And did you know that Walter White's last name was a color? And that Jesse Pinkman's last name was a color? We're going to get to that and more.
Well, I actually was referring to a funny line that Walter had about Saul, but that too. we'll get to all of that. But first, we're going to, you know, like, the week that we just had the final weekend of the summer, traditionally, even though it's still balls hot and muggy as fuck up
here. For those
here
of you
who
don't live overseas, it's Labor Day in America.
It's Labor Day, not with a U, though. Not with a U.
Just an O-R.
Just an O-R.
If you spell color with a U, you're a fucking asshole.
Oh, well, now we've alienated half of our... yes, half of our viewers. Half of them live in England.
We got a big overseas audience.
Big overseas following. So it's one of those weekends where people go out either on vacation or there's cookouts. A lot of stuff happening this weekend across the nation. You do anything fun, Jeff? Do anything fun with your last weekend of the summer?
Well, as a mailman, I really don't do anything fun. It's just I enjoy the 2 days off of not working.
Yeah, not working, not walking.
It did start off on a high note. I don't know if anybody remembers, but the Pawtucket Red Sox Idol Contest.
Paw Sox Idol.
Paw Sox Idol. The second biggest competition in the country behind American Idol. Fact.
Fact. Also fact. We got them checking that one, though.
I may or may not have tried to pimp you guys out to vote for my friend Caitlin because she is the bomb, but she won the competition. She is the Paw Sox Idol. And she's going to get a record contract and be rich and famous, and it's going to be awesome. So that was a really good start to my weekend. Thank you all for voting on PlaceToBeNation.com. Those of you who did, not named Justin Rosero or Josh Richer,
who decided
that it was not the place to spam my own personal interests and ask you to vote for my friend, even though it was a totally admirable cause, and she deserves it. But, you know,
this guy.
She won.
Settling scores.
And anybody who did not help her win, you can suck it.
So I'm assuming that your swag coaching really helped her out there, right? Was that the key?
Yeah, so that's what you think.
Key effort.
This kid has what it takes voice-wise. She has an amazing voice. She could be, you know, a pop star. Pick any pop, like Miley Cyrus, she can blow Miley Cyrus out of the water. She just didn't have the swag, you know? She would sit up there and just sing the song. But you gotta get the crowd into it. And that's what I was, like, teaching her all these past few years, you know? You gotta connect with the audience. You gotta get them. You gotta sing a song they want to hear. You gotta get them up out of the seats, and that's what she did. Pawtucket Stadium, McCoy Stadium, it was amazing. They were all like, "Oh my God, this girl is incredible." She was singing Whitney Houston. She was singing country. She was singing hip hop. She dazzled the fucking crowd. Congratulations, Caitlin. Pawtucket, Paw Sox Idol.
Everything you just said right there made me want to punch you in the balls.
Well, you know, there's not many things that I could say that don't make you want to punch me in the balls. So.
I don't know. There's just something after the word swag. I seriously think that when you drop that word, it affects everything that comes after. Like, my brain just goes like, ugh. Like, there's like a slime emanating from that word in the sentence. It's not your fault.
Josh.
It's my fault. I've got these filters that make me hear these other things and that's on me, but still, I kind of want to punch you in the balls.
You know, when you say that you love someone like a brother, it seems like a really nice thing. But it's actually kind of half nice and half not nice. Because when someone's your brother, you have to love them.
That's
so when
true.
I say that I love you like a brother, what I mean is you're pretty cool, but basically you don't get it. Like, I love karaoke. I love singing.
That's how brothers are, right?
Yes.
I don't have a brother, so I can't vouch.
You just downplay everything that I think is important. And when I say I love you like a brother, it means even though I want to fucking kill you because you don't understand what the fuck I'm saying, you don't listen to me, and you just mock me, and you degrade all that I find is important, but it's okay because, you know, you're just wrong. You're just wrong. And maybe someday you can experience things the way I do, and you can see them on my level, and you can be happy and stop being such a dick.
I hope to get there one day.
Someday.
I don't know. The dickish part of me is a little bit hard to shed, and I'm not ready to cut it off yet.
I think you're just jealous because you've never been the Paul Sox idol.
I haven't.
Or won a karaoke competition.
By the way, we just got the facts in. Our team checked the facts there. Not the second biggest thing behind American Idol. American Idol itself is behind The Voice. So, I think it's third, though. I think they said that it was the third one.
Yeah, it's like The Voice, American Idol.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's why we got this team here, though, to check those types of things. I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm sorry that... But
after that was Friday night, and then, you know, that led into the weekend, where usually I do a lot of yard work, but I didn't get to do any yard work this weekend because of tons of thunderstorms.
Yeah, it's been pretty bad up here in southern New England.
It's been pretty bad. Pretty much the worst thunder I'd ever heard was Sunday night. But I woke up, and ironically enough, being alone on my day off, where I'm usually out cutting the lawns of like my grandmother and my parents and whatever, I decided to watch the movie Ted. You ever seen the movie Ted?
I've seen the Ted many, many times. No, that's a lie. Sorry. One time.
You see?
One time.
All right.
But it feels like many times.
What did you think about
Ted? I see it on the guide many times.
What did you think about Ted?
Well, funny that you said that because I think I caught it last week too, like a little piece. And you know, my friend that was with me, I was like, oh, you ever see this? And they hadn't. So I'm like, oh, let me leave it on. We're catching it at the beginning. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, this isn't as funny as I remember it. It's got funny parts.
It was kind of slow moving.
It's slow moving.
It was a little too long. It was about a half hour too long.
Yeah, it was like it could have been. It's like Family Guy.
But here's
it's always like Family Guy.
Yeah, it was very Family Guy esque, with the same kind of humor.
It even had cutaways.
Had the cutaways. It had the nonsensical lead character. But here's why I bring it up as a segue to the thunderstorm,
Peter.
Because they were thunder buddies.
Of course. I knew that's where you were. Hey, buddy, I was going to let you get here. I knew this is where you're going. Sometimes you got to let them walk on their own, you know?
That's why we have like the same brain. But here's I watched Ted, and one question I came out with was, how did Mila Kunis not get Oscar consideration for that movie?
Well, there's a couple of reasons.
I don't think you can give me one good one, but go ahead.
There were other actresses who actually were better than she was that year.
Look, with the exception of Mila Kunis, it was just a dumb movie about a talking teddy bear and Mark Wahlberg jerking himself off. But Mila Kunis, she played it so serious. She had me, man. I was like, oh my God, this girl really is like wants her boyfriend to leave his teddy bear friend and become a real man. She loves him, but how is she gonna make this relationship work?
You got Nick's Ted.
She had tears in her eyes. She was awesome.
She was good.
I'm not the biggest Mila Kunis fan in the world, but she really made that movie for me, and I was like, wow, this girl, she needed more props for that movie.
Well, I think you should write her a letter. I think you should write a letter and you should address it to her. And seal it with some sort of kiss. And you should let her know, because she needs to know that she's doing good at her job. That's what we all need, Jeff. I hope someone does that to you. I hope someone comes out and says, Mr. Mailman, my letters are prompt, and you're always whistling a jaunty little tune. And I enjoy seeing you every day. I hope someone says that to you.
Is it funny how there are words like that, like jaunty, that only precede a certain phrase? Like, you can't say the word jaunty without saying before a little tune.
Little tune, it pretty much, it flows, it's all one word to me.
A jaunty little tune.
Jaunty little tune.
Jaunty describes nothing else but little tune. How was your weekend, John?
My weekend, well, I was okay, yeah. I took a day off because I had a bunch of things I was going to do, and then I only ended up kind of doing a couple, which were things I hadn't planned, but it was a fun time altogether. I went to a clam boil on Saturday, which is another fun thing to do up in New England. And, yeah, that was great because I got to just basically scarf down clams that were steamed.
Do you think the 50% of the audience that lives overseas, do they know what a clam bake is like?
Guys, let me tell you. Okay. Basically, this was a boil. It wasn't a bake. Okay, this is a boil, so it was just on
clam
the stove.
Clam bake, clam boil, totally different ballgame.
But there was also, like, they boil the potatoes, and they got the corn all in the same thing as the clams. And also with some linguica, I believe there was. You all right?
I'm fine.
Okay, that's good. I was worried for a second. So they boil this all up, and you basically just eat that. But this particular one, they had a lot of clams, a lot of corn, and also they made hot dogs, hamburgers, your typical cookout fare, three different kinds of desserts. It was just, I ate so much. And you know me, I eat pretty healthy. So it was kind of a shock to the system, but a delicious, buttery shock to the system.
Yeah, we're both pretty good eaters. We eat about twice as many calories as you're supposed to.
Yeah. No, not me anymore.
That's because we burn. Linguica or chorizo?
It was linguica.
What is your preference? They're both Portuguese sausages.
Oh, this is tough. As far
as
the Portuguese
man,
meats,
I'm very particular about my Portuguese sausage.
He knows some things, and he knows his sausage. He knows some stuff about his Portuguese sauces. It's very true. All right, so I guess I like chorizo, really, because I'm more into that type of sausage. Do you want to explain, as a Portuguese man, you want to explain real quickly what the difference is to those who might not be familiar with that, who don't have
yes,
any Portuguese in their areas?
Chorizo is a sausage that is infused with red pepper, and linguiça is more fatty and salty.
Yeah.
But they're both
I find
it's not like a, like say, Polish sausage is like kielbasa.
Well, I like in linguiça took the kielbasa. That's what it's like to me. It's that kind that you can split down the middle.
It's like kielbasa, but with less garlic. It's it's more of a very
delicious.
Sticky,
it's delicious. And you know, it really made my weekend. And later on that night, what did I do? Oh, really nothing. Just chilled.
This podcast is brought to you by the Sausage Society of America. Sausages. You should all go out and buy some.
Don't eat it the long way. Just kidding. You can eat it the long way all you want. We don't care how you eat your sausages. Just eat them. So, yeah, well, that sounds fun. I mean, you were saying earlier, too, that you've done a little bit of housewife-type stuff for yourself. So, I mean, due to the rain and all, can't really do anything outside. So, I mean, that seems productive. I basically have sat around and watched Parks and Recreation all day on the brand-new FXX, a.k.a. FX.
A.K.A. Fox Soccer Channel.
I know. It still says Fox Soccer, and it's, like, bothering me because I'm like, can't I just be watching the replays of the Champions League from last year like you've been showing me for months?
You know, you work every day, 6 days a week, so that you can have the Fox Soccer Channel, and they just change it on you, and all of a sudden, the only soccer games you can get are on the Versus Network, which is now the NBC Sports Network, which are terrible Liverpool games or delayed games, like, it just, I can't even.
No, what's even worse is you're not
getting
the biggest game.
I just want to move to England.
No, on NBC Sports United, well, on Saturdays when you're at work, they actually show a game on NBC, too, in the afternoon, like after the morning ones. For fans of soccer out there, they know what we're talking about. If someone watches soccer and Breaking Bad right now, they're in heaven. Yeah, you don't even get the big-name games. It's like you're not even going to get Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, Man U every week. You're not going to get all four teams, which you would get on Fox Soccer. We used to get them all. They used to replay, like, every game. Instead, we're getting Sunderland.
You don't like Sunderland?
Well, no, it's not that I don't like Sunderland. It's just that when you know that these other matches are happening and you're like, that's probably a better match. Like, I care about that match a little bit more because that team is a perennial top – those teams playing are perennial top fours.
Look, man, the 2013 English Premier League schedule in the United States is just a symptomatic description of everything that's wrong with the American sports media. Like, oh, a couple people like watching English Premier League games, so we're just going to ruin it. It was fine the way it was. Fox Soccer Channel was fine the way it was. They had a news station with British anchors who knew about soccer, and they would play games live, and they would re-air them, and it was great. And now they're just like, oh, we got a lot of ratings in America, so we're just going to use all of our billions of dollars and outbuy the Fox Soccer Channel, and now we're going to put them on NBC, and we're not going to have the best games, and we're going to have a bunch of American commentators who don't know what to call the teams. They call Tottenham Hotspur the Spurs. It's not the Spurs. It's just Spurs, like apostrophe S-P-U-R-S, because that's how in England they all know what the hell.
Well, that's one of the bigger problems, that they didn't get people in there that like enhance the product. They got people just talking about the product.
They got professional broadcasters who went to Syracuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they went to – oh, I went to Syracuse. I know how to – they don't know anything about soccer.
What's even worse, I find, is in all the replays are always cut for time, like where you miss huge chunks of matches.
Oh, my God. That's
and that's annoying. And here's what you need to know about NBC Sports and, like, the relationship that the Premier League on there has with that channel. Do you know what comes on directly after on Saturdays? So it's, like, Premier League all morning. Like, they start off with, like, the pregame, you know, for before any of the matches start. Then you get your two matches. Then you get Goal Zone or whatever. After that is a car auction.
Oh,
a show about a fucking car auction. How does that have anything to do with sports? One thing, like, you could say that racing has to do with sports, and even though a lot of times I'll argue with you on that, you can't say that a car auction has anything to do with sports at all.
I can imagine that this is what neo-Nazi Germany must have been like.
Exactly the
if
same.
If you want to watch
before,
soccer,
except Volkswagen,
you
all
live
Volkswagen.
In America, you cannot enjoy it. The only way I can enjoy soccer, European soccer,
amount.
Is to actually move to Europe.
Well, we'd also, you could also try to find it online, live feeds, but that doesn't help you out because most Saturday mornings, at least, you're not around to watch the games. So before, I would assume that for the Saturday games, you were relying on them showing those games all week.
Yes, I'm relying on my cable service provider to show me the games in a timely fashion with relevance. And with British commentators who know what the L they're talking about.
You know that letter that I said you should write to Mila Kunis?
Yes.
You should write one also to Verizon. And you should tell them. But don't seal it with a kiss this time. Seal it with malice.
Man. Mila Kunis should have won an Oscar for Ted. And the current state of American soccer programming is terrible. Moving on.
So this is about the time where we're pretty much probably going to break into Breaking Bad here. Possibly for the rest of the show. You can check, well, when we post it, we will write where we kind of come out of it. And if you want, if you're listening and you don't want to listen to the Breaking Bad stuff, you can just skip it and go to that point. But it's a very good chance that this is it. So if some of you are leaving, we're sorry. And
no, come back for the last
10
minutes.
No, come back. I don't know. We might be there, but just check. Just check it.
We're going to have a non-Breaking
fast forward.
Bad ending.
But if you're not fast-forwarding, then be aware the spoiler is starting right now.
Spoiler starting right now, and go and watch Breaking Bad and get caught up, you stupid, stupid, selfish people.
I think berating them every time isn't going to make them watch it.
That's what America's all about. You got to make them feel bad about themselves to do what you want them to do.
Now, if you are caught up, holy shit, like a lot of the stuff we thought was going to happen from previous weeks that we've mentioned kind of have started happening. We knew that the house wasn't going to get burnt down, and that became fairly obvious right from the beginning of the episode, which was great that we didn't start off. There was no time jumping here, where there actually was time jumping, but not like we've been seeing so far, where we're moving ahead to past Live Free or Die.
Yeah, it was more kind of like Tarantino and Pulp Fiction, where it's the same time frame, but we don't get to see how it connected into later.
Or like Go. also like Go.
Or
that,
like Go.
That whole style from like late
starring
90s.
Starring Mila Kunis, a.k.a. Katie Holmes from Dawson's Creek, which is the same person.
I don't think they are.
Whatever.
Mila Kunis would never let herself be dragged down by Scientology. Okay. That's for damn sure.
Oh, Mila Kunis, man.
So, Jeff, I mean, what did you think right off, right starting out? I mean, like, as I said, the house didn't burn down. Jesse was stopped. What are your initial thoughts about the episode, like, going into it? Like, once you realize, like, where after Walt walks through in that really tense moment where he's walking through the house looking for Jesse and doesn't find him, what were you thinking up to there?
Well, I was thinking that it's too early in the season for there to be a gun shootout between Walt and Jesse.
That's true.
So clearly Jesse wasn't going to be in the house.
And we knew the house wasn't burning down.
The house was not going to be burnt down, and we just get to go into another Walter spew of lies.
Which,
you know, he gets the carpet company, and they're cleaning out the gas.
Yeah, what did you think about that little lie that he made up about that? It was really quick thinking, and I give him credit, because how else are you gonna like explain gasoline? Like, that was a hard thing to have to try to lie. So what he should have did was just been like, "Hey, Skylar, yeah, this is it," because at this point she's invested now, so he should be
exactly
telling her.
Skylar is invested at this point. All he's got to do is say, "Hey, Skylar, I'm really sorry. Someone tried to burn our house down." And then
I don't know why he stopped, but he might be coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Skylar doesn't expect anything less. Even he doesn't need to, you know, procure a sense of safety anymore. But instead, he goes and lies, like, "Oh, I was pumping the thing, and it blew up all over me." And blah, blah, blah. Okay. So
yeah, that was one of the worst lies he has ever told.
You're
on
going
that show.
To equate spilling gasoline on your clothes to someone dumping out 2 gallons of gasoline on your carpet. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work at all. The lie itself was really bad.
It made for a great scene with Walter Jr. and Skylar just staring at him for both completely different reasons. Walter Jr.
Well, no, it was the same reason. It was just...
They knew they were lying, but yeah. for knowing what the lie was great, because Walter Jr. is like, "Oh, he's lying because of this reason, because he has cancer and he passed out," and Skylar was like, "Oh, he's lying because of this reason, because he, I don't know, maybe somebody that he knows tried to burn our house down."
Oh, yeah, Skylar figures out pretty quick. She has all the pieces, though, so she knows exactly what's going on in their life, that, "Oh, the house smells like gasoline, maybe something related to my husband's former business could have something to do with this." She gets that. And what that was hilarious, though, with Walt Jr. saying, like, he was the one that I saw it happening. As I'm, like, watching the show and, like, taking the notes, I'm, like, thinking, I'm like, Walt Jr. is just not buying this. But then when he shoots out, "You're lying," it's like, what? Is this going to be the moment that he actually, like, figures it out? Like, is he going to have the Jesse moment from last week? Is this it? Which, by the way, I would have loved to have seen if they had just... I'd love to see a cut-up there of, like, if we could somehow have that music playing when he says, "Stop the lying," and, like, gets it. We have the same moment, that Kobayashi moment.
Yeah. Well, since he didn't...
Kaiser Sose moment.
I think the writer is basically saying that people who are addicted to meth and heroin are smarter than people with cerebral palsy.
Oh. But are they smarter than people with MS? That's the real question.
I think Walter Jr. may or may not have MS.
I know. Well, so when he comes out and says, "Stop your lying," like, I just gasped and had all those thoughts that I just said that I won't repeat. But then he just comes out and is like, "Oh, you fainted because you're sick, Dad, and I'm concerned about you."
Yeah.
And then it was hard for me, because then I started to feel bad. And that's how I actually felt about Walt Jr. for the rest of this. But we'll kind of jump back to him after this. So this lie was really, really pathetic. Skylar calls him on it later. Actually, no, she calls him on it after they bang out to the hotel, right? They're in the hotel after he says, "You're spying on me," and acts horrified about it.
Yeah.
What a fucking joke.
Yeah. This was a great scene, because it goes from one of my favorite Skylar lines to one of my least favorite Skylar lines, when she says, "Yes, I was spying on you, and I feel just terrible about it." And fast forward 27 seconds later, she is authorizing a hit on Jesse.
Yeah.
Just,
she was saying we need to, yeah, I...
Come on.
Yeah, I don't understand how that happened, how she made that jump. But that's, all right, well, that's really something, like, Skylar, that speaks a lot about what's been happening to Skylar because of her relationship with Walt, because of Walt's actions, which is something that I think is happening to everyone on the show, if that makes sense. Okay, so Skylar got into this. She found out that Walt was dealing, and then she started being like, well, I need to help you launder this money, you know, and first she was like, get out of this house, and acting all uppity, like she owned the place or something, and ungrateful to her meth-dealing, money-providing husband, who was alive.
Uppity bitch.
Who was alive. No, thanks to her.
Yeah.
All right? Thanks to himself. But, so she gets involved, she starts then laundering the money, and now at this point, she's devolving to the point, and it's out of safety, obviously, for her concern for safety for her family and herself and Walt, but now she's calling, now she's trying to make hits on Jesse? Like, how does that happen? What
well,
do you attribute that to? What do you,
I attribute it to the writers being, like, overextending themselves. The writers knew that they had set up the relationship between Skylar post finding out that Walt's a meth dealer and Walt trying to get her to understand why he's doing what he's doing. So, you know, they had the whole scene with, you know, I am the danger and he's the big tough guy and I'm doing this to protect my family. So now she wants him to protect the family and, oh, well, if you're the danger, then you might as well kill Jesse.
Yeah. Now, this is a great line when she says that whole thing to him about, like, well, we've come this far. You know, first she tells him, you need to deal with this, which is crazy. But it's like, we've come this far for us. What's one more?
Yeah, he's talking.
She's just stone cold. Like
she's
just
stone cold. He's talking about, I'm going to talk to him. And she says, you have to talk to him. And he's like, oh, I'm going to talk to him.
And yeah, they have
like,
this whole conversation about the euphemisms and like trying.
Yeah. So he's
actually
saying,
some good writing, I thought, like about mincing about euphemisms and real talk. Which is funny because he really wants to, he's saying the truth and she thinks it's euphemisms.
Yes, she thinks it's euphemisms.
He wants
and,
to talk
and
to Jesse.
He wants to talk to him because he cares about Jesse and she thinks talking to him is killing him and she's figures out that he really means talking to him, and he says, she says, no, what's one more? But then they cut the scene, and that's my problem when you're writing a show that is this dramatic and the scenes are this dramatic. There is more conversation after that. What's one more? Walt would be like, what's one more?
Well,
it's another human being's life, you idiot.
That's funny that you say that,
you
because
stupid, dumb
I
bitch.
Never
He's like
that.
A son to me.
When I'm watching a traditional television show that
just
is told in this way.
If you cut a scene.
It's dramatic. It's dramatic. They got to cut to the commercial and say, watch Slow Winter Sun.
There's more important dialogue after that scene.
Drive it forward, buddy. You know, that's the thing. They're taking into account commercials
Look,
when they're
man,
writing this.
This guy was a cop, okay? He would never kill anybody who was another cop. You know what I'm saying? Low Winter Sun. First of all, why is it called Low Winter Sun?
I don't know, because I don't watch it.
You got
because
low, which
AMC
is like low to the ground,
hits,
and winter, which is a season, and sun, which is the thing in the sky.
Well, no, there I do know, because the sun hangs low in the sky during the winter. There, I just said it all. That's the title.
Hence,
so they just left out sky and hang.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, so now that we've clarified that, probably, I don't know, maybe watch that show. It might be good if someone actually watches that show and listens and wants to shoot us
I'll
a
promise
tweet
you one thing right now.
Email.
I will never watch Low Winter Sun. I watched the first 20 minutes of it
yeah.
a couple weeks ago when it premiered and it was terrible.
It was terrible.
First of all, they showed us everything that was going to happen in the trailer. Yeah, when I Low Winter Sun is pointless.
You can probably see those cast interviews later on AMC.com.
Even though it's got Saul from Snatch and Guy Ritchie is tearing it up right now with all the goddamn Sherlock Holmes movies.
He is. It's funny you talk about Snatch, because it's like you say, oh, it's got this guy from Snatch, but then I start thinking, I'm like, well, other guys from Snatch ended up going on, like, Jason Statham? I hate that guy.
Dennis Farina, he is flourishing right now. He's actually dead.
He's dead.
I'm sorry.
For a second there, I went, wait, I thought Dennis Farina died. I'm like, maybe I was wrong.
For any Dennis Farina family members or avid fans out there, I apologize.
Don't apologize, buddy. No, you don't owe them. You don't owe them an apology. He is flourishing. He's flourishing in syndication with Law and Order.
Law and Order, oh my God. I forgot he was on
there. He was on Law and Order. He was Jerry Orbach's replacement.
Law and Order was my official demarcation of moving out of my house and becoming an adult, because as soon as I moved out of my parents' house, I stopped watching Law and Order, because that's all they would watch.
Really? That's when I started watching it a lot, when I went to college, because it would be on during the day, and at night they'd always show two episodes on A&E. And it was like the perfect like 1 o'clock in the afternoon where it's like, I don't have a class between this time and this time. I'm going to watch Law and Order. We have very different relationships to that show, buddy. And I would like to explore that one day with you. I'd like to get deep down into what Law and Order means. But that's for another time. Because what we're talking about is Rabid Dog. And I believe before that, we were talking about how you think that them cutting it was... You don't like that. Which I gotta disagree, because that's how television is. If you're taking into account commercials, which they always do unless it's HBO, then they're gonna have those moments where they cut and they have the music and then... I'm sorry. You have to accept it.
No, I don't have to accept it. It's 2013. Yet. We're in a new stage, okay? We already had Austin Powers, where Dr. Evil announced his plan, and all the henchmen were hanging around. They were laughing and laughing and laughing, and they stopped, and the laughing got lower and lower, and they were just standing there.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? We're already there. So now we can actually write a scene where there is a denouement to the conversation. And yes, I just dropped this French word on you.
Oh, man, you're killing me with your French talk, your frog
speech.
After
Skyler says, what's one more, there is clearly more conversation. I don't want to cut away from that scene.
Okay, because well, we all there is. But what do you think? What about
we're doing is we're making Walt a henchman to his wife. Like, oh, my wife is mad and she wants me to get rid of Jesse. Okay, we'll see what happens.
Well, what do you think about that next scene that comes after that, though? They're in the hotel, or the next one in the hotel. Really. Because then you've got Walt out there chilling by the pool. And,
there's a waterfall.
Then why don't you just fucking die already?
Oh, yes, of course. Walter Jr.
Walter Jr. shows up.
Walter Jr. strolls up at the pool.
And he shows up at the pool. First of all, I wrote this, and I feel really bad doing it in a way.
Stop.
And I felt really, really...
Stop with the feeling bad.
I can't help it, man. Great. So, we're at the hotel, we're poolside, and what happens but Walter Jr., Walt's reflecting, and Junior hobbles over, because there was a certain way that he lumbered into the scene, because it was so quiet, and like, you just hear the crutches moving, and I felt really bad. That's what I felt bad about, because I'm like... I feel like horrible, because to me this is funny. Him entering the scene is funny, but it's not supposed to be funny. It's just supposed to be his cerebral palsy ridden son.
Yeah, he's just like hobbling up there
hobbling
with his multiple sclerosis.
And then I know that I'm like, oh, what's gonna happen here? Like, they're gonna have the talk, like what's gonna happen? So like basically Walt says, oh, I'm going over my options for business, and that's when we have this other disconnect where Walter Jr. doesn't know what's going on. So it's like, oh, you're talking about getting another car wash? Are you guys going to get that? And he's like, yeah, the car wash.
The car wash.
Buddy, we got bigger problems here. Dude's fucking trying to kill us.
That was funny, because it was almost as if Walter had forgotten for a second that Walter Jr. didn't know that he had killed
the look on the face. The look on his face. That's the moment that I love in the show. It's those comedic moments. Like when he told him that he had cancer, and he was hugging him, and at the end of it, it's like you see Walt's face, and he almost looks like a ugh, God,
this is awkward.
And instead of like the, you know, that moment, I've got to tell my son that I've got cancer again, but it's like, ugh, can't be bothered, somebody's got to fill this kid in. That's what it's really getting to. It really does. So they have this crazy moment here at the poolside, and Walter Jr. is just feeling so bad about his father and, like, telling, like, that he's going to die. And Walt says something that was really, like, I think important, which, I've been through so much, or I haven't been through all of this, or something like, the wording was something very similar to that, where I'm not going to let cancer get me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, did he just, like, is Walt Jr. that stupid, where he's like, what? He's like, yeah, I know you've been through a lot. It's called cancer.
Yes, he's stupid. He's 16 years old, and when your father says something like that, you just think about, oh, he's been through the previous cancer or the plane crash that had a bunch of plane debris landing in his pool and all this crap, almost dying. He's an idiot. He's calling himself Flynn. Like, what the hell does he know?
I hate him.
Why is he going to take his crutches and walk all the way down to the pool, like, go on the elevator, and it's like 2 minutes he's out there. He hugs him, and he goes back to bed.
You think it might have been more work for him to get out there than it was worth.
He was exhausted.
He was exhausted.
He was exhausted by the time he got there.
And plus, they already said it. They got pay-per-view and something else, or like a hot tub or something. And they're like, oh, Junior's in heaven. And I'm thinking to myself, like, Junior's jerking off in the other room. He's jerking off in the other room to porn.
And this just goes back to my problem with
the writers. And we're not going to get to see that bill come in.
From the very first few episodes of this series, Walter Jr. was being portrayed as a kid with, you know, a serious disability who was overcoming it, and he had a really spunky personality, and he didn't get down on himself when people were taunting him. And now all of a sudden, he's like freaking out that his dad has cancer again. He's supposed to be strong, man. He's supposed to be like, he's the one who called Walter a pussy. Remember?
I remember. That was amazing, actually.
He was saying, like, I wish that you had dealt with this a better way because you're just,
You're a pussy.
Yeah, man. That was Walter Jr.
Yeah, no, he said it as it was, but he was also going through his rebellious stage then because his father was getting caught walking around in the nude and shit.
I feel like they really dropped the ball on this. I feel like
he did. He could have been a stronger character.
He could have been a stronger character.
He's just become
He could have discovered what Walter's doing, and he could have taken his side.
He's become. You're right. But instead, what he is he's a source of like dramatic irony for us now because it's like he doesn't know. Everybody else in the goddamn show knows. Gomez fucking knows now.
Gomez knows.
Everybody knows. Badger and Skinny Pete probably know.
Badger and Skinny Pete have known the whole time. What are you talking about?
You're right. That's what am I saying? But they probably know that Walter that Hank knows.
Or
you know
Beaver.
What I mean?
Beaver and what's his name?
Beaver and what's his name? Okay, that was another part. That was one of the. When
Kubi.
For 5 straight hours. Which makes me, my first thought was, I want to see a show that's just like, maybe just a half hour or a web series that's just like hanging out with Badger and Skinny Pete. Like, but those guys just talk about pop culture all the time.
But isn't that the whole problem with the series? Like, people who do drugs, they just want to get high and talk about Babylon 5. What is the big problem? Why does the DEA even exist? Why is it legal?
Well, that's for Ron Paul to figure out, honestly.
we'll get to that next week.
I think, though, that Walt not remembering the name kind of says a lot about Walt because he just doesn't care. This whole rise, he's not to be concerned with people that he thinks are under him, like, you know, a bunch of methods, like Badger and Skinny Pete.
He didn't care about Combo.
He didn't care about Combo. He didn't remember which one he was.
What was his name again?
Are you seriously
asking me that?
Yeah. I mean, that was one of those points where you're like, well, this guy's starting to lose it. He's starting to lose that thing that makes him like me or you, like, you know, human a little bit, caring about things other than just like his immediate family. But a lot of this episode had to do with Walter caring, though. That's the funny thing. I'm sitting here saying that he doesn't care because of how, you know, he can't even remember their name, but this whole episode was about him caring for Jesse, which is obvious because he is appalled when Saul says, why don't we take care of this, or when he suggests putting him down like old Yeller.
Like an old Yeller situation.
An old Yeller situation. It was great.
But see, that's the interesting thing about Walt, because on the one hand, they want to make him out like he doesn't care. On the other hand, he has this loyalty to Jesse.
He does.
So is it the fact that he was Jesse's teacher and he's guilty? Because my biggest scene when thinking about whether or not Walt actually is a certain way or not, or maybe this decision to start cooking meth after he got cancer is what has led this series to become what it is, or if he has just always been evil. was the cold open a couple seasons ago when he's buying the house with Skylar.
Remember that? Yes.
And he's just like, oh, we shouldn't settle for this, we shouldn't settle for that. And you kind of get there's no reason for them to have made that opening without exposing Walt as an egomaniac.
Yeah, I think that was the whole point, because that's what he is, and we've been seeing that ego, which we could call Heisenberg at this, you know, which we would call Heisenberg, taking over and kind of pushing Walt out of the way, where Walt's getting lost. Whereas this episode was Walt's coming back. Like, he is an egomaniac, but he still has those concerns for Jesse. He wants Jesse to live. And that's illustrated when Jesse finally breaks down, because that happens in here. Like, we see how, to get back to the what we were talking about earlier with the, where it picked off, later on, as they move through time, and keep showing us the different events that happened, but from Jesse's point of view, when he went to the house to go burn it down, till everything after that, and then we saw initially Walt when he pulled up looking for Jesse and Jesse not being there. We got to jump around and see what happened with Jesse, and
yeah, basically this brings me to two points in the show where, again, the writing has kind of let me down, because obviously the intro to the show, you see Walt pull up, he discovers the gas can Jesse has and burn the house down, and then it comes back later on in the episode that Walt pulled up right as Hank had already walked in and stopped Jesse, and Jesse said, oh...
Which is a strong scene. Come. How'd you like that? I know you don't like this. So
no,
you don't like that little play that they do. This.
No, like,
why not?
Because there's...
I like that.
They already pulled the tail off Jesse, and all of a sudden now Hank himself is tailing him to the point where he can...
Yes, because Hank doesn't want to let go of this, because this is like his life now, and he realizes it. And it's consuming his life entirely, because it's also, Marie is also heavily involved at this point as being invested in seeing that Walt gets what's coming to him, or what they think should be coming to him.
This is just the latest in a series-wide problem I've had with the whole tailing people thing. You had Mike sitting outside Walt's house for like 2 seasons,
yeah,
and nothing ever happens, and no one ever sees anything. And everything is just so convenient. Like, Walt is getting away with things when clearly if there were drug cartel guys watching him, it never would have been allowed to happen. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you get this scene where Walt comes up on the house, right, and Hank has been following Jesse, even though Gomez just pulled the tail off him. It doesn't make any sense.
It does make sense. Hank is taking it upon himself to do the tail that he can't have other guys be doing. He's doing this extracurricularly, like he was before, when he was trying to figure out the whole case with like Walt about like the laundry.
Then how come Hank wasn't following Jesse when he was at Saul's? How come Hank
he
wasn't?
Was. That's where he followed him from.
How come Hank wasn't
he said
there?
That.
All right. So how come Hank didn't follow the guy in the minivan?
I have no idea.
Exactly. It's just all too convenient, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are too many steps that are just left out.
Again, what I said before is true now. It's television. And not every show is going to be perfect. And even the perfect ones, which we would consider this show is up there as far as like telling their story, as far as plot goes. And even that, it isn't perfect. The Wire wasn't perfect. There's too many convenient things that happened on that show.
The Wire was perfect.
I don't think so.
You're wrong.
Well, we're not going to debate that here. But... You're right. They went to that well here, and that does help make conveniently show things that they like weren't going to show.
All right, so we go from
that is convenient.
We go from Jesse not telling anything to Hank to telling Walt that Hank wants him to tell stuff to him figuring out because of a pack of cigarettes what Walt had done with Brock to Jesse being at Hank's house.
Aiming to burn it down.
Aiming to burn it down. And then...
He is weak. Jesse is weak. But I don't think that's where he ends up. I think, okay, as far as characters go, Jesse has been one of the most weakest-minded characters on the entire show. He's always being manipulated by everyone. He's just looking for a father figure. He's just looking for someone to believe in him, someone to love him. You know, it's been very clear. You had that emotional crying last week that he had with Walt, the way he hugged him. It's like that. That's what he's out for. So he's easily going to be manipulated by people who do that. However, by the end of this episode, he's not weak anymore. He is determined. Determined, like everyone else on the show that isn't with the last name White or Goodman, to take down Walter White, Heisenberg, the danger, the one who knocks.
The danger. Yeah, I mean, again, you get another one of these flimsy scenes where he's just going to walk up to Walt in the park bench and he sees a big, large man with a bald head.
Yeah, the ending was that. I didn't like that at all. I didn't like the ending. I liked it when they did it earlier. Like that, what the scene that you were talking about where Walt pulls up at when Hank and Jesse are leaving, you know, that conveniently, and now we get to see, you know, that. This, I thought, I didn't like at all. Like, it just, it was like, really? So this is where it's going, this is how it's going to happen? So, like, Jesse and, everything could have been fine, and... No, it's not that everything could have been fine, because he still wants... He knows that Walt can get away with it, even with wearing the wire and getting him to talk. Because,
yeah,
let's be
his
honest...
His view of Walt is so...
He thinks he's
aggrandized.
Like... He sees that he thinks he's this devil, which he isn't. If anything, he's like... He's nowhere near even as bad as, like, Gus would have been.
No. Walt still is not the kind of guy that would just cut a guy's throat who was his right-hand man.
No.
But and, to get to this point, to get to the point where Jesse is even wearing the wire, what do we have to see? We have to see Hank and Marie just become totally just morally vapid characters.
Well, that's very interesting, because I have this theory, and I'm sure a lot of people would back me on it, or they might disagree, but it's that... Walt's decision has muddled up everyone's character. Like, I'm not... Like, the good in all of them is kind of being lost because of Walt in some way. Like, with Skylar, with her being corrupt to the point of trying to call out hits on, an innocent person. But granted, he's a danger to them, but an innocent person. Then you've got Hank with his single-mindedness in pursuing... to Walt, where he's willing to do anything, including breaking the law by having, you know, this person confess, not reading him his rights, you know, because he's not under arrest, but yet he's confessing. So technically he could be tried for any of that. They're going to, like, wire him, you know, like, it just doesn't, it's not in the up and up, and he's willing to do that now. Plus, he's willing to pretty much do anything to get it. And then Marie, who starts talking about poisoning, in her, which I thought the therapist... session was funny, because the way she was just, like, knocking him down, being like, get your mind off the details. You don't need the details.
Yes, but what is going on here? Shut up!
Yes, exactly.
I already told you I can't tell
you
that.
Of course Marie's therapy session would just be run by her, because that's who she is.
Yeah.
But that was kind of chilling, actually, with her talking about, like, and she's just gone now. At this point, the thing that made Marie, which, you know, she wasn't always great... to begin with, like, wasn't always a great character. She was judgmental and a lot of character flaws. But now she's actually just fantasizing about poisoning her brother-in-law.
She's fantasizing about poisoning her brother-in-law.
Which, by the way, saxitoxin was the name of the poison that she was talking about.
Derived
from
shellfish.
Yes. And
the blah, 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 blah. Like, come on. Marie and Hank, you know what? Fuck them. I don't care about them whatsoever. Hank has been just a total selfish, self-centered, I have my own goal about, like, being the best DEA agent I can be kind of guy. Like,
yeah.
And Marie is a crazy klepto weirdo.
But she is out for, she's out for vengeance, and it's corrupted
vengeance
her.
For what? Vengeance
because,
for what?
Oh, that's what the
because
weird thing is.
Because they're so mad that they've been screwed
yes,
up.
Yes, that's the funny thing. Is like, I'm like, so that's where,
so
that's
officially
where this corruption
no...
comes in, where it's like, she's actually so angry at that she's been lied to that she's trying to take him down. Now, granted, trying to take down Walt is noble because he's a bad man.
Yes, but why are they doing it?
They're not doing it because of the nobility.
They're not doing it. Exactly.
And
There's officially no likable characters on this show anymore.
I think Jesse might be getting there.
Jesse is the only one. But he was still...
And Walter
still,
Jr.
But Jesse, I mean, come on, he shot Gale, for God's sake.
He did. He did shoot Gale. But ever since then, that's really the only thing that he's done that's actually brought him down to that level.
Did you say and Walter Jr.?
Yes. Just because he's done nothing. He's so out of the loop that he hasn't been corrupted by Walt. But that's another thing that I was actually going to ask. And I know we got off Walter Jr., but what do you think it's going to be like? You think he's going to find out? And when he does, do you think he's going to awkwardly hang himself in a slapstick manner?
I mean, if there ever was an opportunity for an amusing suicide, it would be Walt Jr. in this show. But no, I'm going to predict.
In seriousness, though, do you think he finds out?
I think he finds out, and I think that he's going to be the one to ultimately kill Walter. He's going to shoot his own dad.
Ah, interesting. That's an interesting prediction.
With his Uncle Hank's gun.
If that happens, let it be known that Richard the Man-Man predicted it first. No other person on the internet at all could have thought of this. And they most definitely didn't record it and put it up and upload it into cyberspace.
What would you rather have? Would you rather have a son who had cerebral palsy?
Oh, now you're dead. You're just dead. No. Would you rather your father be a meth dealer?
Oh, my God.
I know.
First of all, what's wrong with dealing meth? That's what I want to get at.
Like, a lot.
What is this show trying to say about the moral ambiguity?
Societal
about
rot. It contributes
what
to
what has Walt actually done wrong? I submit nothing.
No, he hasn't murdered anyone. They're all
I'm
sleeping.
Rooting for him.
They're
I'm
all
rooting
sleeping
for
with
rooting
red
for
paint
Walt.
On them.
I'm rooting for Walt over Hank. There's no reason for the DEA to exist. There's no reason for meth to be illegal. If I want to do meth, I should be able to do meth. If I can go to the store and buy pseudoephedrine and cook it and smoke and snort or AKs or
are you familiar with libertarianism, Jeff?
I'm familiar with everything and nothing at the same time.
Okay, so you should check that out. You might be interested in it. But a couple of things here. Now, I've read on the internet a lot of people referring to Skylar as Lady Macbeth here.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that's, you think that's accurate, or you think that's just like, do you think that's something that we should be comparing to? I mean, Marie's doing it too, this whole...
I don't think it's an accurate comparison. I mean, Lady Macbeth, Macbeth was the character in the Shakespearean play who was under the
Which
king.
Which one was it?
It was called Macbeth, I believe.
Gotcha.
So he was under the king, and Lady Macbeth was very ambitious. She wanted him to become king, so she talked him into killing the king. But then once the act was actually done, she was overridden with guilt, and she ended up killing herself. Skylar never wanted Walt to be... She was totally happy with him being a chemistry teacher. But after it was done...
Was she?
She was, yes.
Was she really happy, though? She didn't seem it. They were struggling big time.
Have you ever seen her cook Walter Jr. breakfast? You've never seen a happier woman.
Yeah, that's true. That's
she
true.
Loved her role.
She shapes the bacon on your birthday.
She makes it into
be
the number.
Number. It's amazing.
This
that's actually a really good, Band-Aid. Really good analysis of that there.
So she's kind of the anti-Lady Macbeth.
Again,
the beginning,
intention matters.
Intention was the opposite, but now she has taken on the role because what other choices does she have? Go to jail?
That's true.
Lose her family?
Do you think in this episode, especially with Walt going back and forth so much and kind of being a pussy, as Walter Jr. would say, do you think that she's being more pragmatic by saying, you know, like, do you think her pragmatism is something Walt needs to hear?
No. Let's face it. Skylar is suicidal. We've already seen the scene where
That's
she jumps
true.
Into the pool. Once you're suicidal, then you're just going to do the logical thing. Humanity is not logical. As human beings, it is not a logical thing to try to let a meth dealer perpetuate his state of... Normally, she would just turn him in. But since she's already willing to die, she's like, you know what? I just want everything to go as smoothly as possible, so screw it. Let's kill Jesse. Let's do this and that and whatever, and let's just do whatever I gotta do to get a divorce and move to Hawaii.
I'm wondering how much, actually, I'm talking bad a few weeks ago, Julie Bowen there from Modern Family was obsessed with, she kept saying Morocco. Like, you know, Skylar just wants to go off and buy shoes and go to Morocco. She said it like 3 times. It was really annoying.
That is weird.
It was annoying comedy. which is sad because that show is actually really good. Chris Hardwick's good.
Chris Hardwick is good, but Julie Bowen, let's just... swear off anything she's ever done, except Ed.
Except Ed. That's good. Now, the title of the episode was obviously Rabid Dog, and they kept making all these references to putting down rabid dogs and the Saul's old Yeller reference. It actually describes the movie, which was always colorful, as Walt points out. Now, do you think that... Do you think that everyone here is starting to... First of all, do you think everyone's really foaming at the mouth? Because I started to get that idea from watching this episode, that it's kind of describing everyone. They're all foaming at the mouth for something. They're all foaming at the mouth for... to kill Jesse. To get... and Marie and Hank's way to get Walt. Walt's the only one that's not really foaming at the mouth.
But in Jesse's eyes, Walt...
But yeah, he's... And so, now, but we call Jesse the rabid dog. Obviously, that's what the reference was. But do you think it applies to everyone, including Walt? Because obviously, Jesse must think that Walt's the rabid one. If you were to ask him, like, does Mr. White need to be put down?
Yes, every character in the show at some point to somebody else has been a willing companion or a moneymaker or a accomplice. And now it's all coming together where basically somebody, for everybody else, wants them to come down. They want to bring somebody down. Marie and Hank want to bring Walt down. Jesse wants to bring Walt down. Jesse wants to bring Hank down. Walt wants to bring Hank down.
But Jesse doesn't want to bring Hank down anymore.
Yes, he does. He would ideally... He still hates the fuck out of that guy.
That's
he would ideally love to get Walt and have Hank fail. They're all just kind of like...
Even though they offered him coffee and sleeping pills?
Well, he has nothing against Marie. That's Jesse's weakness. He's a ladies' man. That's why he felt so hard for Jane. That's why he felt so hard for Marie or Maria or whatever that Hispanic chick's name was. Brock's mom.
Brock's mom.
That's why he's like eating dinner
at
the White household. And he said, oh, Mrs. White, this and that. And she was really mean to him because she's a bitch. And Jesse never did anything to her. And she should have been nice to him is all I'm saying.
Well...
But, you know, he still hates Hank. He still hates Walt. He wants to get... He hates Saul, man. He wants Saul to be put down as a bad dog. They're all bad dogs. It's a big metaphor.
All a bunch of rabid dogs.
They're all a bunch of rabid, stinking dogs that at some point could have made a decent life out of each other, and they've just blown it big time.
Well, as we mentioned, the end of the show, where they're leaving us going into next week, was pretty tense, I'd say. Like, there was that case of mistaken identity where... Jesse's walking up to meet him. He sees a dude that looks tough kind of lurking around a corner. He's fucking paranoid because I'm pretty sure he's doing drugs because that's what they've implied. And
he also thinks Walt's so smart and he could somehow put a hit on him.
In the middle of a park.
In the middle of the day.
Yep. And he then runs off and says, we're going to get this guy. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you where you live. And
Jesse has another plan.
And he's got another plan, a better plan.
What could it be? Can we possibly conjecture and pontificate about what Jesse's plan could be to take down Walt?
So there's a better way to get him. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not going to conjecture on that.
Of course we can't, because we're not as smart as Vince Gilligan and all the writers of the show. They're so much smarter than us, because they have Marie wearing black clothes now. Marie used to wear purple clothes, but now she's wearing black clothes. How smart is that, right? Because after, like...
Those are setting decisions. They're not actually... No, I've actually... Well, that's actually a good segue. So this show ends, this particular episode, going into next week's, which I can't pronounce the name.
You can't pronounce the name?
Tia Hadiji or something.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So we're going to go back to the Czech Republic again?
Yeah.
Can we just be done with Lydia?
No. We're not done with Lydia, and we're not done with Sky Blue, because Walter... He made a lot of phone calls that last episode, leaving that message that Hank then had that led him to, you know, think, oh, let's go meet Walt. And then also at the end, he called up Todd trying to get a hold of Uncle Jack because they want to put down Jesse. And that's where they leave us.
So sad.
Yeah, but as you were saying, you mentioned Vince Gilligan and the writers. I was listening to a podcast of... Now, they're in control of the story, so we have to accept that. Like, we don't control the story. And if we did, we would probably not enjoy Breaking Bad as much, because we would have written it.
I could make a much more enjoyable Breaking Bad.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
Stay tuned for the Mailman's Breaking Bad episode
fiction.
1 to the last, coming out next year, 2014. Watch out for it.
No, but he was on the Nerdist podcast the day after the premiere episode of this half of the season. And it was pretty good. He was a pretty interesting guy. Didn't know, that's when I found out that he wrote Home Fries, which was blew my mind because it wasn't very good at all. But
what are you talking about? I love Home Fries.
Well,
Luke Wilson is best, man. That movie was totally mismarketed. It was marketed as, oh, it's cute, it's Drew Barrymore, and like doing a drive-through. No, it was like weird and stuff. And it was Gary Busey's kid, Luke Wilson. It was hilarious.
They're
flying a Apache helicopter.
Nope, I did not get that.
Please give us your feedback. Thumbs up, thumbs down, Home Fries, written by Vince Gilligan. What are you saying, Josh?
No, what I was saying was he was on, and one of the things that they were talking about there, by the way, it's Tohajili. Tohajili is the name of the next episode.
Tohajili.
So, yeah. No, he was talking about that, if they could think of, he was talking about Saul specifically, and how much they love him and how fun it's been to write for Saul and how Bob Odenkirk ended up on the show, which I'm glad because he's been a great character since he's been on, since that first episode where you saw the commercial.
Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul.
Is Dave Cross?
Where's Dave
Cross? Can we not work in a Dave Cross
Breaking Bad part? Because then I'm just going to be seeing Tobias Fuke and then...
Come on, man. No. Bob and Dave.
But one thing they said was if they were going to do a spinoff, he was thinking Saul. And he mentioned it like several times. Like he kept going back to the Saul spinoff. So are you mad? Because now he's kind of telling us that Saul's probably going to live. So that kind of like closes a door there. Or is this something you would be interested in? I mean, it would surely be funny, but what else did they do with the Saul spinoff?
I am extremely angry. I don't want to know anything, and now that I know that Saul's going to live to the end of the series, it pisses me off. Because you know what? There's a whole bunch of possibilities of things that Saul could do to mess up Walt's and Jesse's future plans. And I'm not just going to sit here. Like, I've already invested 4.5 seasons of Breaking Bad. I'm not just going to start watching a new one just because Bob Odenkirk is in it and just because Vince Gilligan writes it. What are they going to write it about? He's going to defend a new drug dealer?
Well, that's where I'm confused. I'm anxious to
see. That's such a dumb thing
to say.
Like,
a part of me would like to see it, but the other part of me is not really... it's kind of scared. Like, I feel like it's going to take on that, like, I haven't seen a lot of X-Files episodes, but I know that the Lone Gunman, like, the tone was obviously different than the X-Files, and, like, it tried to go with those guys, and it just didn't work, and it makes me go, is this another Lone Gunman example?
I just don't like the idea.
Spinoff is just kind of, like, it means well, but it's stupid.
I don't like the idea of a dramatic spinoff. Like, if you're going to have the Mary Tyler Moore show, and then the Dick Van Dyke show, and whoever else, or whatever, the Joey show, even though the Joey show sucked, but it's not his fault. But
it's always his fault.
A dramatic spinoff? Like, no. Breaking Bad is a novel. It is a work of American literature. You can't just take a character out of it just because he had a bunch of catchphrases and a cool, deep, raspy voice delivery and make a show out of it. It's going to suck. No, I don't approve of it whatsoever. Thumbs down.
Thumbs down. I'll watch it, but I'll only watch it like that first time, and I will not commit to my DVR recording every episode. Let's just say that.
Oh, wow. That's
I know.
Saddle right there.
Well, one quick other thing. Another thing I saw around on the internet this week, Breaking Bad related. It said that this show would have never been able to happen if our healthcare system wasn't as broken as it is.
Oh, my God.
And I went, yeah, that actually is brilliant, but duh, who cares? Like, it makes sense. Like, you're completely right, but that is the healthcare system. I guess Bryan Cranston actually said, too, if the show had started 5 years later, then it probably wouldn't have worked.
That's stupid. They could have just made a different set of circumstances.
He needed the money.
They could have made a different way, a different reason for a chemistry teacher to need a bunch of money. For a chemistry teacher who had the ability to make world-class methamphetamine to make money. Like, no, that's dumb. Forget about the whole...
I gotta disagree because...
Free healthcare and cancer.
The cancer part is, like, the major part of the show. Like,
but he still thought he was gonna die. He's not just trying to pay for the money. He's not just trying to pay the money to pay for his treatment. He's going to die. He wants them to have money.
That's true.
It's not like, free healthcare.
When people find out they're going to die and they have time to make money to leave to their family, it's usually illness. So the healthcare, I think, would always have to be in it.
He had a very big ego.
Maybe he could have gotten
AIDS. He was part of the gray matter thing. He lost out because of some stupid contract thing with Elliot.
Yeah,
Friends. What's her name? Anyway, the point is he still wanted to make a lot of money.
Gretchen.
He still wanted to be He wanted to be a millionaire before he died. They still could have come up with something.
Interesting. Like I said, I think they're completely right, but at the same time, it doesn't matter. And just be glad that we have this show, even
I'm not glad. I'm getting angry and angry every episode.
That's funny, because I'm actually getting more excited.
You know what? Because I sat here, and before the first podcast of this series, I read your columns, and I listened to Dean Moore say, these are going to be my favorite 8 episodes of the series, and it's just a total self-aggrandizing bunch of bullshit. The only reason he likes them the best is because they're Hank-centric, and it's just going to be, is Dean Morris going to get an Emmy nod for the season? They're letting me down big time, Josh, and I really hope that, you know, they have a few left. They're going to pick up.
Well, they got 4.
Okay.
I think they'll do it.
4 is relatively few.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of stuff that's going to happen. We already know.
Except a lot of stuff is going
to
happen.
They've already told us a bunch of stuff that's going to we already know that Walt's going to make it for, you know, the future.
Yeah.
Something he's going to be found out publicly. And is Jesse going to die? I don't think so. I think Jesse's going to be allowed to ride off in the sunset.
I think Jesse's one of the ones that's chasing him at the end. I really – now that this happened even more, and Jesse just seemed so that it's become almost – it's starting to become this war almost with more people taking sides now. I feel that Jesse is one of the people that's chasing
him. I'm not so sure he's being chased. I think that he's planning – I mean, if he was being chased, why would he go back to his own house?
To get the rice in. Duh!
Yes, fine.
We just saw it, man.
But he's not being chased. He's planning on killing people.
I think he... But we don't know yet. We don't know. And we're going to find out.
I'm
excited for that.
It's probably Walter Jr. He wants to put Walter Jr. out of his misery. Because he's sick of seeing him stumble around on his crutches. It takes him 3 hours to go from the top floor of the hotel down to the pool.
Kid's never going to get laid that way.
Never going to get laid.
Never. Now... All right, well, that kind of wraps up Breaking Bad, although we went over. Now, I think we got time for one more thing, and it's what the fans want, I think. I don't really ask them. But it's the this week's Postal Tip of the Week.
The Postal Tip of the Week. Postal Tip of the Week this week comes from a Facebook comment I got from one of my Facebook friends. I don't want to name names because, you know, I'm not sure, like, how comfortable they'd be, but let's just call him John Spencer. All right, so John Spencer posts on my Facebook and he says, hey, I sent a letter. It got returned to me with the person I'm trying to send the letters to address, forwarding time expired. Hey, Jeff, why can't you just send the letter? If the post office knows where the address is going to, just send the letter to the friggin' person. Well, John, there are many different reasons for this. But let me explain to you a little concept that we call the forwarding service, okay? When somebody moves, you fill out a change of address. And when you fill out a change of address, what we do is we send the mail to a building that is called the Central Forwarding Service. And then they process it over a computer, and then they send it out to the new address. Now, this is a totally stupid service that shouldn't even exist. Okay, if you're going to move, then you should update your address with everybody that you know, all of your companies that you pay bills to, all of your friends and family and whatever. So to forward mail, what you're asking us to do is to take mail for an address where this person doesn't live anymore and then send it out again. We do this for 1 year, but the address stays on the books for 18 months. So what happened is John Spencer sent this letter. The person had moved over a year ago, but less than 18 months ago, and we did him the courtesy of telling him, the courtesy, mind you, the favor of telling him the new address so that he could actually update his records, because the person who moved didn't care about you enough to tell you, or you didn't care about enough to call and say, hey, you're moving, why don't you tell me your new address, okay? All of this mail that is being sent to people that have moved should be returned to sender, no questions asked. But we're returning it to you a year plus in advance. with the new address, and you're complaining. You're complaining even though you sent it to the wrong fucking address in the first place, okay? So why don't you update all your contacts? Why don't you call your contacts and tell them that when they move, they should tell you the right fucking address, and this won't be a problem anymore, okay? Mr. John Spencer, I'm so sorry that we did you the favor of telling you this person's actual new address, because if we were just going to forward mail forever, then we would just, for a million years in advance, we would just be forwarding mail, and it wouldn't matter. You could just send, hey, just don't even put an address on, just put the name, and we'll figure it out for you, because you're too fucking lazy, all right? That's the end. Put the new address on it, find out who the new address is. I'm so sorry that we told you the new address after 18 months of this person not even living in the fucking place anymore, okay? And that has been the postal tip of the week, brought to you by the United States Postal Service. The United States Postal Service, yes, they still exist.
They did not bring that to us, though, unfortunately, not with all those. Now, John Spencer's defense here, it sounds like the problem is actually probably the person who didn't let people know that they changed their address.
Yes, that's obviously the problem. But the point is, when he gets the letter with the yellow sticker saying the new address,
well, he didn't know. He didn't know because he hasn't heard this postal tip yet. So now he knows. Now he knows exactly that this person doesn't care about him, and also like what he should do in the future. I didn't know that either. Actually, I want to thank you. I was gonna say, you know, why can't you guys do that? But then once you put it that way, it's like, you're right. There can only be a certain amount of time because obviously the post office is bloated enough as it is.
It's like packages. When we have a package, we take it out one day. If they're not there, we leave a notice, we take it back. The next day, somebody says, why didn't you take it out a second day? Because there'd be an infinite amount of packages. We can't take them out every day.
An exponentially increasing amount of
packages in forwarded mail. Come on, man.
Yeah, that's frustrating, but somehow, I'm going to probably end up blaming it on the financially insolvent post office. Somehow, they have to be messing that up. I don't know.
Look, man, as a postal worker, we still strive to do the best we can to bring mail to the people every day. If we could just do our best to get the addresses right, it would be great. You know, we won't lose as much money. We won't have to rely on local knowledge. Just stinking, get your address right. Tell people when you move. It's not that hard, okay?
It's all about communication, really.
It really is. It's exactly what it is.
Tell your friends when you move.
When you major in communications, what you're basically saying, if you major in communications, that you want to be a mailman. It's a totally useless major. No offense.
Communications major right here.
To the guy to my right.
The guy to your right. I know. Well, that pretty much... So that's the postal tip of the week, and I think, as I said before, I think it was a good one, and I've learned a lot today. I've learned a lot today in general.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to teach you people.
And I hope our audience did too.
Bring the rates down.
Bring the rates down?
Yeah, bring the rates down together.
That's our cry today on this Labor Day. We're fighting to bring the rates down. We will not stop until we do it. I guess this is where we part ways. Although we'll be back here again next week, talking about the next episode, Tuha Dijili, or however you say that.
We're gonna figure out the pronunciation.
Figure out that pronunciation before next week, I promise. And we'll be back. We'll be talking about other stuff too. So
feel free to visit placetobenation.com if you have any suggestions for topics that you want to hear in the podcast. Be sure to email them to us.
Yep, our email addresses are right there. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at Machadouche. You want to spell that?
That's MachadouChe.
And mine is Joshua Richer. And
tell your friends about this podcast and have an A1 day.
Have an A1 day. I like that.
Found it double, and that's when old Yeller had fun.
Here, Yeller, come back, Yeller.
Best doggone dog in the West.
Best doggone dog in the West.
Old Yeller was a fighter, a rootin' tootin' fighter, and any scrap he knew just